Big.
Shiny.
Goons.
Touch them all, Joe!
Yeah! You beauty!
It's only game.
Hello and welcome everyone to the show that gets people talking about something else. This is Big Shiny Goons and it's episode 13. I'm your host Thomas and with me today is Steve, a massive Ottawa Senators fan and owner of the account that you might be familiar with, Steve on Sens. Steve, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain with the playoffs going on, but yeah, how do you feel with kind of looking on the outside or on the outside looking in? Right now,
I mean, of course, I'd love to be gearing up for a first round matchup against the Leafs. But I mean, with the way the season ended for Ottawa, it's pretty hard to not be happy. They played great down the stretch. They played hard throughout the year, and I think things are looking pretty promising. You got some great performances from players like Josh Norris. I mean, Shane Pinto's looking great. Philip Gustavson was outstanding down the stretch. So. I mean, they get another top 10 pick, so I'm pretty happy. But of course, you know, I feel like if they were, they'd have a better chance of being the Leafs than the Habs. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, like, I mean, they do just play the Leafs, like, in a different way, right? Like, it's just that, like, again, it's that whole sicko mentality that's kind of been going on this season of just, like, well, be a pain in your ass just because we can and we're like young and unproven, so it'll just be fun.
Yeah, I think going into this year, I think a lot of people were saying, you know, I'm good to lose every game except for the ones against the Leafs and the Habs, and the Sens did a pretty good job of doing almost that because they went, you know, 0-9 against the Oilers. They had a pretty bad record against the Canucks, and they weren't great against the Jets. But when it came to the Leafs and the Habs, I mean, they were, you know, they always came to play, and they won the season series against the Habs, and I think they came just short against the Leafs. But they still came out with that, you know, 5-1 comeback. Lots of fun victories. So, you know, overall, almost ideal season.
Yeah, like considering where they were kind of like going into it. Did you see some people kind of shudder at the fact that they finished, I think it was 9-2-1 was the record in like the last 12 or something like that? That like ruining their draft pick chances or the lottery odds or whatever?
I mean, there was some thoughts on that. And I mean, Sens fans kind of know that feeling going back to the Hamburglar run where they lost out on a chance of getting Connor McDavid at the expense of a short-term playoff run. But honestly, with this team, they've come bottom two, I think, the last 3 years. It was slightly better last year, but bottom five the last 3 years for sure. And just to have, you know, some glimmer of hope that they can string together some wins and it's not just going to become a losing culture, I think fans are pretty happy with that, especially considering, you know, with the draft this year, a lot of players haven't been able to play as much as in past years, and there's no real consensus top pick. I think people are pretty happy with just to be in the top 10 there and to see some winning evolve, because you never want to develop that kind of losing culture that, you know, has grabbed hold of Buffalo and has taken hold of Edmonton over the last decade. So you know, they're, you know, ultimately meaningless, but I think in terms of the development of these young players around Brady Tkachuk, they're important wins, I think.
Yeah, like, I used to, like, scoff at the idea of, like, oh, losing culture, like, it's all about kind of, like, it's all just, like, about the players and, like, what they can do and, like, kind of a very black and white approach, but there is something to, like, actually enjoying some games and just like and like seeing the players obviously play in like a place where they want to continue playing, like, and with the people that they want to continue playing. So I feel like Ottawa is a very like good example of that, of just like, it might not be the best organization from like top to bottom, but also it's still like
allegedly.
We'll sprinkle allegedly. I don't want to get sued by Melnick. They just already suing enough yacht captains too much. But yeah, it's just like it's this whole thing of like you might as well win out. Like it's just it's fun. You might as well finish the season on a fun note because like there's gonna be hard times anyways, and especially in a draft where like literally it could be anyone in the top five. There's like 10 players that could just like wind up there, and there's no real like top, there's no McDavid in this one to really complain about. So it's just something where it's just like you might as well have fun, and that's kind of the reason of sports. Like the Ottawa Senators kind of just embellish that, right?
Yeah, I think a fun element to this year was since they started so terribly at, I think it was 2-12 and 1 or something like that, they were already in such a massive hole to start the year where, you know, they'd win games and I wouldn't be, you know, cringing about, you know, are they losing their draft position like in previous years where they'd win a game and you'd say, oh, now they've leapfrogged, you know, the Devils in the standings and now they're out of the top five or whatever. They were so far in the hole to start with. It really didn't matter until the end where they really started stringing together some wins. But I really wasn't worried about losing that draft position at all this year, which I think helped add to the fun of it.
Yeah, like if you lose a couple spots, like I even if you get the top spot, the difference between that and like the seventh or eighth pick, it's like there's no real, I don't know, from what I'm hearing, I'm not like a draft head or like completely like watching grainy tape of the like VHL or whatever, but like yeah, from what I see on like draft Twitter, it's like there's no real top talent, and like there's such a wide kind of just spread of a gray zone of like kind of high-end prospects. But yeah, I don't know, you might as well have fun with it. And like, and the I feel like paying attention to the Senators this season kind of has been just fun, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with a lot of Sens fans, there's a lot of faith in the scouting staff under Trent Mann. There's a belief that he'll be able to find a good player really no matter where they are in the draft. And so I don't think there's, you know, that kind of panic you might see in a different season or with a different team. So, I mean, honestly, the vibes really could not be better with your Ottawa Senators in 2021 right now.
Are you saying that they have a better future than the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It's something a lot of people are starting to say, and it's something you're going to be hearing more and more.
Yeah, I think more and more people are saying it. That's what I'm hearing on the ground. Definitely. I have my ear to the ground. Anyways, let's move on to the first segment of this show, kind of get on while you're here. So, Steven, could you tell the audience what you're listening to lately?
Lately, I mean, honestly, I find that I've been sucked into a weird dark hole of listening to way too much AM sports radio in Ottawa. Which is not healthy and I would not recommend. But in terms of the music, I've found the time to listen to. One that I've been listening to a decent amount is Ice Age's new album, Seek Shelter. I got into them after they put out their 2018 album, Beyond List, and then I saw them play in Ottawa at the 27 Club, and I was just blown away by the energy that they brought to the stage. I remember making a point to my friend of saying, like, I mean, not music wise, but just like in terms of like what I'm seeing on stage, I feel like this would be like seeing like the Smiths in like the middle of the 80s with that, just like it was just like this crazy energy on stage. So after that, I've been really into them, going back to their earlier albums too. They're really enjoyable and a decent amount of range for sure, but I've enjoyed their new album, been listening to a decent amount, so I would recommend checking that out for sure.
Yeah, I think I've listened to the first half. I haven't gone through all of it, but yeah, I've definitely enjoyed it. I find it's like a little different from their earlier stuff from what I remember, but yeah, it's good. It's like kind of in that still that like sonic landscape alternative, kind of still in that space, I guess is the right word.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a change, but I mean it still has like a, you can still tell it's them for sure. It's got that kind of gritty feel to it. In terms of a one track to check out, Vendetta is a good one. So yeah, I've been enjoying that one for sure.
Yeah, and have you listened to Ice Age for a while? Like, when did you see the show?
That was summer 2018, so okay. Shortly after their last album came out. I loved their last album too.
Yeah, and you've been listening to them for a while?
Literally just since 2018.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's sweet. Yeah, there's kind of been a band that's been kind of in and out for me, especially kind of, I don't think I listened to their 2018 album, but I've just kind of been back into that universe of that kind of music. But yeah, it's definitely so enjoyable. Like, I don't know, just sitting and just during work or anything, kind of just listening to it in the background. Like, do you specifically have like a time where you listen to music?
Honestly, the majority of the time I'd be listening to it would be in the before times, while commuting, right, all the time. But now, most of the time I'm listening to it's either, you know, I'll have something in the background while working, which isn't a great environment to be, you know, analyzing music or anything yeah, like that. But these days, just, you know, going out for walks or going on bike rides is probably when I listen to the majority of my music. And it's pretty nice. Been enjoying that aspect of COVID. There's really not much else to do in Ontario right now. That's pretty much how I'm listening to music these days.
Yeah, everything sucks here. It's tricky too. Like, it's definitely changed like my personal listening experience of just like trying to get through things, or there's no like, I'm going to put on this album, by the time this is done, I'll get to my destination. It's like, I'll put on this album and then I'll just be like, an hour's gone in my work day, in my whatever. So it's just like, it's completely different. Like, it's just changed. Like, do you find they listen to different types of music depending on the limited activities that we have during COVID anyways?
I'd say so. I feel like I'm like, honestly, I'm probably in a bit of a rut music wise lately. I feel like I'm less prone to checking out a new album and sitting down and listening to it full length a couple times. Like, I might put on a few songs, but then I might, you know, have to do a house chore and then I leave the room and I come back and there's an interview somewhere else I want to check out. So I feel like, you know, that aspect of my life has COVID's kind of negatively affected, but of course, like, if I really wanted to, I could make the time. It's too bad. But something I should really definitely make an effort to get more into again.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes. You kind of get like fatigued a little bit, during this time. And I'm sure like everyone's kind of feeling the same, but a strategy that I found of checking new music is that I listen to albums while watching sports.
Okay.
It's like, I've talked to about it a little, like with a couple people. But yeah, it's just like, it's something that I found just helps like my listening. And then also if you're not like a big fan on commentary or like, or if you don't want, who's that Boston guy?
Jack Edwards.
Yeah. If you don't want him like screeching in your ear anymore, then just pop on some Ice Age or whatever.
See, that's funny because I live with a hardcore Bruins fan. So Jack Edwards is on all the time in my apartment.
That's terrible.
I've kind of grown to like him. I mean, if you just accept him for what he is, he's a big Bruins homer. But you're not looking for impartiality on the Nesson broadcast for sure.
I mean, that's the one place where you're not really. Again, like you just said, you're not looking for like a straight and narrow guy to call it down the middle. If you're a Bruins fan, you must love it. Just like completely.
Oh yeah, my roommate absolutely loves it. He's like, honestly, he's a funny guy. Some of the things he gets worked up about are really hilarious. So, but honestly, in terms of checking out music instead of Jack Edwards, something I should probably look into.
I mean, it's just a thought. Like, I sometimes like even ask for recommendations of like just random artists or anything that like I want to check out, and just like go down a path and then dedicate some time to it. Like, especially when I was feeling kind of similar to you, where I was just in a rut of like discovering new music. Like, I wasn't really getting anything new out of what I was listening to, or kind of just the same old albums, then just like putting on an album because I like the cover or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. the beauty of technology. But yeah, and just zoning out to that. Yeah, for sure. Is there like a strategy that you have? I know you're saying like you haven't checked out a lot of stuff, but like a certain way that you discovered new music when you did?
Honestly, I'd say the majority of it comes from, and certainly this is more applicable in the before times, but like just, you know, talking to friends and just, you know, hanging out in someone's apartment and someone says, you know, hey, check out this. And you enjoy it. So I'd say that's the way I enjoy discovering new music the most. That's that kind of social environment, connecting with people over it rather than, you know, reading blogs and stuff. I mean, I still check out, you know, the big, you know, Pitchfork and mm-hmm. Bandana and stuff like that. But, you know, I really do miss that, you know, connecting with people over music. So it's one thing I'm certainly looking forward to once things hopefully get back to normal sometime soon.
Yeah, like I was just talking about it last episode with Drew Fairservice, who was on, and he was saying like how he discovers a lot of stuff is through like basically the Spotify feature of just like related artists mm-hmm. or like the artist radio that you get and then discovering it through that. Like I found that is a very like, it's a realistic way. It's very like honest and just like, because that's how I've discovered a lot of artists, just the
nice.
Just how easy it is and just like kind of like you could find someone that you've never heard of in like 5 seconds by just like going through a rabbit hole of artists that you like. But yeah, honestly, I feel like the organic way of communicating with friends and people that you know you share in like a similar opinion with, just having that and kind of that connection is definitely missed.
For sure. Yeah, I'm still hanging around on my parents' Apple Music account. So I miss it on that Spotify feature. I think Apple Music does something similar, but yeah, one day I'll switch over to Spotify for sure.
Yeah.
And benefit from that.
Yeah, it's all right. It's you could check out this podcast on Spotify, but yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the big segment, the main kind of juice while you're here, why you're here. Steve, could you tell the audience what album you picked to talk about?
So I decided to go with Speaking in Tongues by Talking Heads. It's their 1983 album, the first album after stopping working with Brian Eno. And I think it's an awesome album.
Yeah, it's perfect. Well, I'm not going to say it's a perfect album, but it's a very good album. What was your kind of your first listen, like your first discovery of it?
So, I mean, I feel like I got like really into Talking Heads kind of like later than I should have for some reason. I, you know, of course I knew the hits, you know, Burning Down the House, Psycho Killer. But I never really like actually like, and I listened to Remain in Light a few times and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't something that, you know, I was immediately drawn into. And I guess maybe I needed to look into something that was a bit, you know, more poppy or accessible potentially. And this album, the first time I listened to it would have been so back in the fall of 2018, I was doing a semester in Paris, and it was really just one day I was walking around. It was actually a day where they decided to like shut down the city center to cars, so it was like only pedestrians, like a bunch of people skateboarding around, beautiful day. And I put it on and I just remember like walking around and listening to Girlfriend Is Better and just being like, this is like the best thing ever. Like the vibes were just phenomenal. So ever since then I haven't really looked back. Become a big Talking Heads fan. Just the grooves on this album, it's just got everything. So that's really how I first kind of really got into Talking Heads.
Yeah, I usually ask people, I usually ask that same question of kind of their first listen of the album that they want to talk about, and that is probably the best story I've heard so far. Of just,
yeah,
of like just walking around Paris and just like, I'm gonna pop on this album for the first time and then really discover it and just get absorbed by it.
Yeah, it just like blew my mind at the time, like just, you know, walking in and out of shops, walking along the Seine. It was a phenomenal day, one that I look back on very, very fondly.
Definitely during these times and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was kind of Girlfriend is Better is the first track that you kind of grabbed onto, or was it something else?
Yeah, I'd say that was the big one, because I mean the album opens with Burning Down the House, which I was you know definitely familiar with, and then Girlfriend's Better is the third track, so I guess it stood out right away. Honestly everything about it, it's great chorus, the instrumentals are crazy, very fun production. So I'd say that was the one that really drew me in. But if you go through the rest of the album, I mean, the range on it is phenomenal. You get just like crazy dance bangers like Moon Rocks that pull you in. I love it.
Yeah, it's honestly a great album. Like, it's just kind of, again, like you're saying, kind of the versatility with it. And I feel like it's, and I guess Talking Heads in general, it's one of those albums that kind of is so accepted by like everyone. I feel like you could see it as a pop album, you could see it as like kind of in the alternative world. Like, it's a very kind of like a mixture kind of a lot of things where people can approach it from different angles and kind of just still appreciate it. Like, it's one of those rare albums that does that.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of album you can listen to, you know, if you're feeling down at work, or it's this kind of album you can listen to, you know, having drinks, about to go out for a big night out, or it's the album you could find yourself listening to, you know, this must be the place, you know, crying drunk at 3 a.m. Like, it's the range, phenomenal.
Yeah. Is that from personal experience or?
The first two, yeah. The third one, no, that's 2-3 a.m. is after my bedtime.
Right, so. Oh my god. Do you check out a lot of other like Talking Heads albums, or is it just kind of this and a couple more?
I mean, pretty much I really love their stuff. Basically right up until Stop Making Sense, then I really haven't checked out their kind of later stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, it's not credited as on nearly on the same level as their earlier stuff, but pretty much everything from their debut to Stop Making Sense, I really love.
Yeah, and it's just one of those albums again that you could kind of just appreciate. Have you seen David Byrne's like live show now? Like, not the actual live show, but I think there's a video of his live show, his performance.
From Stop Making Sense?
I believe so. Let me see.
Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect segue, because once you get kind of, I mean, maybe tired of the songs on Speaking in Tongues or any of the other albums, you can immediately switch over to Stop Making Sense. And that live show is...
Yeah.
Just such a treat to watch. I mean, it's a regular thing that my friends and I will throw on if we're just like hanging around having a few beers. It's so much fun. Just the way it's kind of starts slow and then it just picks up and the band joins him, and then you get to watch him in the big suit, which is just, you know, pure comedy, and you get to watch him like dance around like a maniac during wartime. And then you get to watch him slow dance with a lamp. It's a great video. But you brought up seeing him live, and I actually did get the privilege of seeing him live while I was in Paris too.
Oh, geez.
Which was pretty crazy. He did his his American Utopia tour, and that was phenomenal. I had heard from a few friends who had seen him. Earlier in the fall at City Folk Festival in Ottawa, and everyone said it was like just the craziest show ever. So I had to get tickets for when he played in Paris, and just the way he lays it out, pretty much everyone has their instruments, but there's no wires on stage at all. Everyone's just carrying it. And everyone's like dancing in various like formations. It's remarkable. Like the choreography was really impressive. I can't imagine how they put that together. So if you ever get the chance to see that, if he's ever going to do that kind of show again, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think there's a video. Oh, I'm looking it up now because that's terrible. Yeah, HBO. So he has actually like a video of it, luckily. It was put out last year. But like of one of the live shows, I guess, that he decided to put on tape. But yeah, I heard amazing things about it when it was going on. And I almost got the chance to see it in Toronto. But like, it's one of those things where it's like, this must have taken hours to just like come up with and kind of, again, you said the choreography of like, and again, you could probably attest to it more because you've seen the actual show. Unfortunately, haven't even seen the video yet, but I've just kind of heard the concept of it. But just like, was it each individual song is like a different to complete kind of moving around? Because it is like 20 or so people, like a couple dozen people, all with different, like, and even the drums are all split up in between people, right? So, yeah, it's just this whole, like, performance. So it's like, and it's all different for each song?
I believe so, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, I remember he brought in Born Under Punches. And the way they started it was... I think the bass started first, and then like he just layered it and layered it until all of a sudden it was just this crazy, you know, the crazy complex intro of Born Under Punches, and it sounded just flawless. So yeah, I think every song is choreographed differently, and yeah, the amount of time that put in to do that, like honestly, think about it, like you're David Byrne, you're already a legend, you know, why not just, you know, tour and do your thing, you know, play the hits, but he felt the need to put all the time into the various elements of choreography. I mean, that's I really got to respect the amount of effort that took, for sure.
Yeah, like it's immense, and like kind of just speaking on David Byrne as like a person, like I feel like he doesn't get enough credit. Like I don't know if there's just something like about him that's not really like very applicable to a lot of kind of the mainstream art and just in general of kind of the general acceptance, but I feel like he doesn't get the same credit as like a David Bowie or anyone for that's like kind of in the same feeling of like art rock and like that kind of like in between, again, like kind of I was speaking to earlier, of being appreciated from both sides, of people that want to take music as art more seriously, and then people that just want to like appreciate for its like kind of simplicity and kind of acceptance into the public sphere. But I do feel like he doesn't get enough credit for what he's been able to do for like decades now.
Yeah, I don't really know if there would be any reason for that. I mean, the only, you know, comparable, you said Bowie. I guess, you know, his discography would be, you know, much
it's not the best example because Bowie's a legend, obviously, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like David Byrne is such a, you know, quirky guy. And he's got a book out on his love of bicycles, which I've been meaning to read for a while. Yeah, I'm not sure why. You know, maybe he doesn't have the fame of some others do, but he seems like such an interesting, eccentric person for sure.
Yeah, it's someone that I again, like probably for a long time, we're going to be reading about kind of his art and kind of what he's been able to do and been up to. But yeah, I guess you mentioned Brian Eno before because it was kind of in relation to that, but do you listen to like a lot of his stuff, kind of the ambient?
Yeah, I've listened to a few of the ambient albums, and I've checked out some of his other stuff. I can't say I you know, I'm a huge fan or something, but yeah, I enjoy his music for sure. Obviously a legendary producer, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just good all around. It's just like you can't really complain too much about it. Like, it's just so, I don't know, just this whole album and like Talking Heads in general and like, you know, and all that stuff. It's just like, I don't know if you could say like a bad word about it, really. Like,
oh, definitely not.
Like, I don't even know where to go like from here. It's just like, it's just a good album that you can't really like, it's just so pure. And like, you could go into all the production and stuff and kind of the how this is the first one without Eno and talk about their evolution kind of in their sound and the popularity of Burning Down the House especially. But it's just a good album that, like, honestly, just one of those things where people should just listen to at least once, just like experience and just like just simply enjoy.
It's you know, there's those albums where it's like you have to check out, but maybe they're not the most fun albums. This album is you have to check out, and it's really fun.
Right, it's not like a slog of like, you know, you should really listen to that that avant-garde piece, really. Just like, mm-hmm. just you should check that out because it'll expand your mind. But this is like, no, like, this is fun. This is like enjoyable, but also not challenging, but super like greeting you like a warm hug, but then also like giving you more than like the usual pop stuff and just the acceptance of just pop music in general, especially around that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, technically, you know, it's a phenomenal album as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of places where this album goes wrong at all.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Are there any other tracks that you kind of really took a liking to, or just like other than Moon Rocks or Girlfriend's Better or anything like that?
I mean, the classic on this album, of course, This Must Be the Place.
Right.
Just a beautiful song about love. I mean, I feel like any description I will do won't do it justice. So I guess I'll just say, like, go either listen to it or watch the version from Stop Making mm-hmm. Sense where he dances with the lamp. it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. Yeah, again, like, it's just, it's one of those songs where it's just like very, you get into a zone with it, especially with like the repeating guitar and bass lines and kind of just over and repetitive and just like kind of zone into. But it's just, again, like this beautiful fragility of it, especially with the vocals and everything. But yeah, it's just, it's really good. I really enjoy that one. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a perfect closer too. Like, kind of just wraps you up in like kind of this end of the album where you kind of experience more like, again, like just before, like jumping around and Girlfriend's Better and all that stuff, and just kind of like more of the poppy and funkier tracks. And then this one kind of just gets you in like a closure state of mind, kind of.
Yeah, phenomenal closure for sure.
Anyways, let's move on to the final segment. Steve, do you have any recommendations for the audience? Any book, movie, article, podcast, anything that you're kind of checking out that you think people should be listening to beyond this album?
Okay, I'll give two mm-hmm. albums, and they both have Ottawa connections.
Perfect.
So I hope that's accepted. But the first one just came out. It's an EP called Hurt Is Boring. It's by an artist called Fan Club Wallet, all one word. She just put out her first EP. It's got some like, you know, songs of the summer, or at least I think they are. They're really fun. I would recommend it. I mean, she's on every streaming platform, so it's easy to find. Highly recommend. And the other one is I believe it's a 2018 album. I'm gonna confirm that. 2018 album from Ottawa/Elmont, Ontario band Elementals. This one, it's a bit, you know, hits close to home because okay, actually, first of all, this album absolutely rocks. It like some incredible. Sorry, I'm just watching the hockey game and Paul just scored. My bad.
No, it's fine.
my apologies. That's so unprofessional. but anyways, back to this album. These guys are legends in the Ottawa music scene. They've put out a couple albums and they're both good, but this one I think is where they really hit their stride. And they actually 2 years ago, shortly before COVID hit, they played a house show in my apartment.
Oh.
Absolutely killed it. We ended up with a massive noise fine, which is too bad, but just they absolutely kill it. I cannot recommend it enough. The album name is Mother Nature and Her Bipolar Tendencies. And I guess what I think about when I think about that album is my brother crowd surfing in my apartment wearing my Martin Prusek Sens jersey. So.
What an image, honestly.
Yeah.
That's perfect. So is there like a big... So I haven't probably been to... I am ashamed. I haven't been to Ottawa in like my adulthood. But is there like a big kind of established music scene?
I feel like it was growing over the past few years up until COVID, mm-hmm. and I mean, unfortunately, with the pandemic, a bunch of venues have had to close, like Press Cafe closed, Bar Robo closed. I believe Babylon's up for sale. I think 27 Club's up for sale. It's really looking rough these days. But before the pandemic, yeah, things were good. I mean, obviously not the same, you know, scale as the Toronto or Montreal scenes, but for a city that, you know, hasn't really been known for its art scene, I think Ottawa was really making some strides. I mean, too bad that happened, but I mean, I have some very fond memories, you know, in the basement of House of Targ, watching New Swears play and stuff like that. So I hope it gets back up to where it was.
Yeah, it's upsetting that it's affected so many venues, and especially like in a town like Ottawa where it kind of needs that stuff. Like it's a very, I don't know. Like it's even in Toronto, like it's been felt, like especially with venues closing and rich dudes just buying them up and rechanging them or whatever, like because they can.
Hey, places have to become Shoppers Drug Mart.
Okay? Yeah, or Loblaws. You know, yeah. We can always make fun of the Leafs, where they used to play is now a Loblaws, so that's always good. But
we're all gonna become Loblaws at one point. This is Galen Weston's country.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the
we're just living.
He's the mastermind. He's the Canadian Q.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I might have to cut that out, but I don't know. I just feel like Ottawa is especially like a good town to kind of, the vibes that I get anyways from the people that I know there are good. Like the one band that I know for sure that used to come and play shows a lot in where I grew up was Pine. I don't know. Yeah. You know them?
Yeah. Yeah. One of my friends used to be in it.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I know them. I've seen them in a bunch, playing shows or whatever. I forget when that was. That must have been so long ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of the one Ottawa band that I always remember. And I think there's maybe another hardcore band, but I forget. But yeah, I do feel like it's a scene kind of that could definitely, well, obviously you'll have a better idea of it, but kind of needs those venues to really stay open.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I mean they're pretty limited right now. I mean you're I think Targ's probably barely holding on. I don't have any insider information. I'm just assuming. And a few others are around, but you know those Live on Elgin's around still somehow. So I mean it's really too bad to see how many have had to close up, because I feel like you know for I mean, I think Ottawa was a decent city to be a musician in. Like, up until recently, the cost of living wasn't, you know, immense like in Toronto. Mm-hmm. You know, Montreal's close, the States are close, Toronto's not far. And you know, it's a pretty stable economy with the government here. So I feel like it was a pretty good spot for musicians. I have a few musician friends, and they all seem to think that, you know, it was punched above its weight in terms of, you know, where people tend to think the Ottawa music scene actually is. So yeah, it's definitely a huge loss, and I hope that that there'll be such demand for live music after the pandemic that we'll get to see some new places open up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too, where like people are pining for this now. Like I was talking to a buddy or whatever not too long ago, but it's like I'm so over just any video streaming of like anyone playing in a venue, even though that's now banned apparently. But just like just all the like alternatives to live shows, just like, oh, watch this band perform, whatever, or NPR Tiny Desk at home, and all these like little like quirky ideas that someone came up in like a marketing meeting or something. It's just like, it was such a cool idea at the beginning, and then it's like, I just want the real thing. I just want everything back to what it was like 2 years ago, honestly.
Yeah, I really miss it. I miss the, you know, your feeling of your ears after a night where the sound was too loud, and the, you know, standing around awkwardly with a beer in hand, you know, feeling the sticky floor and you know, the line for the washroom, you know, just those mundane things. Definitely miss.
Yeah, definitely. Anyways, I'd be hating myself if I didn't ask about Sen's Twitter. I meant to before in the pre-show or whatever it was. But I do feel like the team in Ottawa just creates so much ability to create content off of it. Like, I do feel like it's one of the best in the league for like content wise. Do you feel that way?
See, I do feel that way, but I've always kind of wondered if that's just because, you know, this is the stuff the algorithm pushes to me, and you know, maybe other teams have as equally good, you know, content makers out there. But I mean, based off of like this year, maybe opened my eyes to it. Like, I feel like a lot of outside Sens fans were like, Sens Twitter is pretty cool. Like think about all the stuff like Defector.
Whatever. Oh yeah, yeah.
They had an entire week dedicated to both the Ottawa Senators and, I guess, U.S. Senators. So it's I feel like this year has kind of been like a strange like coming out party for Sens Twitter, which is very weird, because I've been, you know, tweeting about the Sens since like 2013, I think, and I feel like people have really gotten into it recently, and I think a lot of that has to come from the sheer like, honestly, this team is crazy to follow, and I don't mean in terms of like, you know, winning obviously, but like just in the last, I think honestly, as long, like going back to 1992, the disastrous teams of the 90s, going through to, you know, the era where they were, you know, losing to the Leafs every year, and then going into, you know, they went to the Cup final, and they tore down, they come back, do a slight rebuild, and you have the Carlson years, but in there you also have things like the Andrew Hammond run, an unexpected trip to the Cup final in 2017, and then the team literally just fell off a complete cliff and has been at the bottom for 3 years straight. It's been so weird, and the amount of strange things the Sens organization does that make you kind of like laugh at it a bit. Like, they've done some awkward things, like they tried to do a flash mob like way after that craze.
Wait,
like,
what?
Ended like in 2014, I think they tried. Like, I feel like the Sens, like as a Sens fan, I think when you're exposed to the stuff in this market, like they're kind of fun to laugh at a bit, you know, they're the Sens. But I feel like from that mindset, you start to think, you know what, they're the Sens, and now it looks like they have a bunch of, you know, good young pieces, And I think people are really excited to both see a winning team and B, talk a lot of shit on the internet when that team that, you know, we've all been kind of like laughing at, you know, comes back from 5-1 and beats the Leafs, or, you know, goes out in, you know, a couple of years and unexpectedly wins a playoff series or something like that. So I think and I think that definitely manifested in the sicko thing this year. We're kind of tired of being, I think, you know, just completely written off, and you know, we're excited just, you know, be watching the Sens. So
yeah, it's just like to come from where they were with like Stone and Carlson in 2017 and like that Rangers series and just like everything, like in the Penguin series, like it's just like, it's crazy just to think about that it's been so like different in between the rosters of just like, so, but also like that was not that long ago. And like they're almost in the conference finals. Like it's one of those teams where it's just like this roller coaster ride of like vibes to get into it. And then like now with little, not a ton of expectation, but just like a sure, a little bit of a rise of like, we have this core now and kind of building upon it and kind of just seeing what it is. It's just fun to follow, honestly. Like it's more of a, it's less, like, I don't know if anyone that, especially the people that I follow, like, really deeply think of hockey as, like, a very serious thing. Like, just from the Sens Twitter, what I get is just, like, especially the people that I follow, it's like, you might as well make fun of whatever you can, have fun with it, and just, like, and enjoy the times where it's, like, it's insane. Like you said, like, come back against the Leafs and just win it, and then, or like finish the series, the season on a high with a Josh Norris, whatever. Just like, it's just crazy.
Yeah. I feel like the mindset is like, if we win, this is like the greatest thing ever. And if they just lose a game, it's just like, ah, who cares? Yeah. Like, so you really can't hurt us, I guess, at this point.
Yeah.
We've seen our fair share of just complete disaster over the last 3 years. I remember the summer of 2018, every, like, almost every day, like, something, like, just, like, mind-bogglingly bad happened, whether it was, you know, the Hoffman-Carlson allegations, or it was, you know, Randy Lee at the scouting combine, or just something Melnick did. Mm-hmm. It was just constant. And it was, like, it was genuinely embarrassing at times because it was so, so, so dysfunctional. And I think part of our mindset at this point is realizing that that dysfunction is there. It can bubble up at pretty much any time, but like, we're just still here, you know, enjoying hockey, like just watching pucks go in nets.
Let's go deep and life continues. Yeah, it's yeah, they're definitely an organization that is dramatic, let's say, or entertaining.
yeah I mean, honestly, okay, like, I mean, there's, you know, you can watch sports because, you know, like, you have that hope that one day your team is going to win, and that's the ultimate thing. But I think sports can also be fun when you recognize that at the end of the day, you're just kind of, like, we watch this for entertainment, and you kind of divorce, you know, any kind of considerations about maybe the Sens could potentially move one day, and you just watch what's in front of you. The product is genuinely entertaining. You know, sometimes it's, you know, hilariously bad. But you know, with, like I said, with the Hammond run, you know, you get those 5-1 comeback wins sometimes, that unexpected trip to the finals. I think being a Sens fan is genuinely like pretty fun, pretty crazy. And it's I very much enjoy it still somehow.
I know, like, it's almost like sports writers could take a book, like, take a page out of, like, professional wrestling's book. Like, just enjoy storylines, enjoy narratives. There's no, like, deep analysis of, like, scoring goals or whatever, and, like, doing all this stuff, just like enjoy it as pure entertainment. And just like, again, it's something that you could kind of just follow and ride along with and just enjoy, really. And I think that's honestly the purest way of looking at sports.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely agree. Yeah.
Anyways, you could have those great takes and more, where people can find you, and that is
At Steve on Sends on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about just the crazy weird stuff that has happened to the Ottawa Senators, I've started a community wiki. It's senslore.fandom.com. You can add or edit your own articles if you would like it to about the Ottawa Senators. I think there's a lot of funny stuff that's going on, so that's also a resource you can check out.
Yeah, no other franchise has a lore wiki. Like, that's what the fuck I'm talking about. Like, honestly. Anyways, you can follow the podcast at big_shiny_goons. You could follow me at No Salary Retained, and you could rate and review, follow, subscribe, and click all those buttons that you should on this podcast. And once again, Steve, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was lots of fun.